Hello, everybody. Welcome to RPG Cast, episode 809 for the week of April 18th, 2026. I'm Chris Privitz here, bringing you a show about the news of RPGs, video game style. Joining me today, we have, long time since we last had you on, Jonathan Stringer. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I bet none of the listeners even remember who I am anymore.
Yeah, he's the retro guy. He plays old-ass games that you forgot about, and he goes through great lengths to use original hardware and convert the signals in a very high-quality manner, right?
Well, sort of. Yeah, no, I have a...
You bought one thing, and now I'm labeling you as the guy.
Well, I got some of the analog systems, so that's not really old hardware, no. But I also use the RetroTINK for some of the original hardware, too.
You don't have to use the RetroTINK on the analog systems, right? Or is it even better if you do somehow?
You do not have to use the RetroTINK for those.
Oh. Some people fight with AI model settings all day long. I'm closer to that. Some people fight with video game video outputs all night long. And some people just play Nike like Robert Albright. Hi, Nike. Hi, Nike. Hi, Robert.
Wow.
Hi, Nike man. The Nike man.
I mean, it's not exactly wrong. although this week there was injuries in gaming.
Injuries in gaming?
I will get into that when I go over what I played.
Okay. All right. And then rounding us out, we have Ryan Costa, the reviewer himself, the man with the demos. He's going to do some demolition on this podcast today. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. I've definitely tinkered around with quite a few of the games we'll be talking about today, which I'll go over when it comes up.
Castus Berger has a question for you, Jonathan. By retro, do you mean the PS3 and 360 era? I hate it.
Well, I guess so. I guess that counts now, right?
What is the most recent system that is considered retro, do you think?
PS3 and 360, according to Andy.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Wait,
according to Andy? Where did Andy say that?
We've actually discussed it numerous times on our streaming team channel.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so that's the RP gamer definition. All right. I'm going to ask.
Share the definition with vintage, where anything 20 years plus is considered vintage, which is then considered retro. I think that's kind of the default consensus, if there is one.
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting a live Google search on this.
This is a ChatGPT that I'm not even logged in for, so I don't even know if that works.
Who are you? Why are you trying to talk to me?
ChatGPT,
PlayStation 3 right there.
It agrees. PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii U. Why those systems? The quote-unquote 15 to 20 year rule. You're not making it better, ChatGPT.
Jonathan was saying.
This sucks. You know what? Forget ChatGPT. It's garbage. What's a non-AI way to ask this question?
We consider 2006. Things made in 2006 and before are considered vintage now. And to me, that's like, I just bought that the other day.
I graduated from university a retro age ago.
I haven't graduated university.
I think ChatGPT is a customer of where I work, so I probably shouldn't say their product is garbage. It's a wonderful product, and I enjoy using it to have fun moments on the show like this. Thank you very much. Am I covered, do you think? Did that work?
I mean, you're also assuming they listen to our podcast.
They better not, but just in case someone ever does... So what I'm going to do, actually, very shortly, and this is already live, if you have... Overcast on iOS, if that's your podcast catcher, Overcast on iOS devices, you can get transcriptions of every show in that and like watch them live flow down the screen while people talk. It shows you what they're saying. The accuracy is imperfect because it's done by an on-device AI. It's not like shipping the podcast to ChatGPT or anything, but... It is. It's doing some local AI transcription. One of the useful things that local AI can really do for you. Except it guesses words wrong. So, because of that, I think it's more likely that things we say on the show can be picked up by people with searches. Like, I don't know that everyone's searching podcast transcripts right now, but I mean, technology is always moving forward. I think one day your words here will be picked up in a Google search and used against you when you start a political campaign. Like, that's the guy who said he didn't like Suikoden 2. He don't vote for him.
Exactly, Chris.
Exactly, that's right?
For you.
Yeah.
See? It's really good timing that I came on when I did as well.
Oh, is it?
Speaking of, yeah.
All right. So what I was thinking of doing, now that the podcast player is doing all the transcriptions and I listen to his podcast in his own podcast player, the person who develops it. And he went over how the feature works and I realized I can just do this very easily and add a transcript to the RPGcast file so that any podcast player that can support those transcript formats, or you, if you just open up the right tab in like the music program or something, you could see a transcript of the show without having to use that particular podcast catcher on iOS. And I was going to start like doing that in the next week or two, but now I realize that means I'm publishing an inaccurate transcript that can be used against me in the future. And so now maybe I should think about that some more. I don't know. Do people want transcripts of the shows, do you think? Is that useful?
I don't know.
Is our show useful? Oh, I shouldn't ask these questions. What if someone says no?
I mean, if someone says no on that last one for you, Chris, yeah. I think Andy just might rethink retire. Having us do the show.
Yeah. Well, it's my show, not Andy's, but Andy's wonderful to help keep me on task and help out True. On weeks I'm not around. And sometimes on weeks when we're both around, it's very taxing on Andy to do the show and be in the office. He's got long-term diseases that sap his energy levels. So,
but we do love when Andy is on.
We do. It's the best when Andy's here. All right, let's do the best we can without Andy. Let's talk about what we've been playing. I'm going to defer to Jonathan because he's been away the longest and might have some interesting things for us that we haven't thought about. If he ever unmutes.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, it was pretty good timing. I'm replaying through the Suikoden games.
Okay. So are they worth replaying? They must be because you're doing it. But
what's that?
Are they worth replaying is what I was going to ask.
But. Well, yeah. I mean, I did the 1 and 2 remaster. I've beat 1 a few times now, and I've only beaten 2 once way long ago, and I didn't get like the best ending. So I'd always meant to go back and play it. And so I've been thinking about doing it a few years ago, and then I heard the announcement of the remaster. So I was like, okay, wait, I'll wait to play those. And of course I bought those and still took a while to actually get to them. Just too many games, right? So
too many games, all the games.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I went through 1, went through 2. Now I'm on 3, but you know, obviously there's no remasters of 3. So I'm pulling my old 3, 4, and 5 off my shelf and play. Actually, no, I'm not even taking them off the shelf. I have the PS2 loader thing on my PS2. So I'm playing it off a hard drive. It runs a little better that way typically. So playing through 3, I'm about halfway done, and I beat that one back when I was in college in the early 2000s. So that ages me a little. Huh. And then I have 4 and 5 to go. I've actually never played 4 and 5. So that'll be fun for me. New games.
I know 4 is coming. You also going to play like Tear Crease?
You know, I've never played that, and I do have it. I might. I'm undecided on that one.
Is the goal to have fun or to play through Suikoden? You can't do both if you're going to play them all, right?
I would agree with that, but Tear Crease wasn't that bad.
Okay. Is there no stinker in that franchise?
And I will play the tactics. Probably Tear Crease and 4 are probably the two least liked.
Is Tear Crease is the tactics, right? Or am I?
No, there is a PS2 tactics, Suikoden tactics, and it's an add-on story to 4.
Oh. An add-on story to the one people don't like to begin with. Oh boy.
Yeah.
That and there, well, be, I, this is when Konami was floundering, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Wait, but 5 was good. So that can't
5 was good.
I can't keep it up. Suikoden 3. Okay, Jonathan, I got to ask you. 3 was like the game of the year when it came out. Does it hold up? It was at least nominated if it wasn't. I thought it was.
It wasn't. I like 3. It still holds up pretty well. Yeah. The story, I guess it depends on what you consider holds up. The story is pretty good.
It's not like Chrono Trigger in the way people remember it, like as a hallowed game that that stand the test. Okay.
Or so Suikoden 2.
Or okay, so Suikoden 2 is that game for you. All right, then. Fine.
Suikoden 2 is probably
Suikoden 1 is boring. Can RPG I just say it? Suikoden 1 is boring. When I try to play Suikoden 1, I get bored.
It's fairly quick to run through. I mean, 3, okay, so 3 is cool because it has you have 3 different protagonists, almost 4 if you want to get technical, and you kind of bounce the stories and you can choose which order to do them in, and choosing which order to do them in will you recruit your characters, and depending on which one you can recruit the same character from the different heroes. And so the first 3 chapters for each one, you can only play with those characters that you have recruited. So it's pretty awesome how they did that, and it's a fairly unique story plot device design, which has some weaknesses to it, right? You see a lot of the same stuff on repeat, just from a different perspective. Some people can get bored of that. Other issues with it is, my biggest gripe with it is the backtracking and the way the world maps work. It's not really so much a world map.
It's a very popular podcast. You shouldn't hate on it.
Yeah, I used to do the backtrack back in the day, 15 years ago.
It was retro. You're a retro backtracker.
I'm almost a retro backtracker with Minky, and I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah.
So, and Phil, it was Phil and Minky, and I joined them. And they're going to have me take it over at one point, and then
what happened? Oh, you had other things come up.
Yeah, I had you kids. Yeah.
Though those things.
Yeah. Yep. So I was backtracking before I even had kids, and my daughter's 13. So
I backtracked before it was cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm OG. OG, almost OG. Quite OG.
You merely adopted the backtrack. The backtrack molded me. I was born in it.
That's when I couldn't go on those too long because Minky would want to do little skits and stuff, or Phil did, and then we'd still sit there and talk about it for like 4 hours.
We have some skits, but they're very fast, basically joke back and forths now, because that was a problem. So they really cut it down.
The problem was that it was actually causing Kelly like anxiety.
Oh, to do the writing, yeah.
To do the writing for
that's how I am with writing. I don't like to write, and because it makes me anxious.
Like some weeks she had trouble coming up with ideas. Like, so now it's like friends.
I have spent on this show. I have gone through hours of paralyzed anxiety and procrastination just to come up with a freaking title in the past. This is why the new process is to come up with a title before we end the call.
Now,
but
I don't worry about necessarily writing too much because I have at least 4 or 5 sentences on everything I'm talking about that I prepare ahead of time. So I got like 1,200 words ready for this.
Yeah, you have the opposite problem. All right, what were you going to say, Tim?
Yeah, but it was causing Kelly anxiety for making the skits, but because some weeks she would just like have no idea of a good skit for the game. So now it's more osmosis. It's like it's easy to find jokes, and unless we come up with like a good skit. Last year we actually had a really good combination skit that ran two different backtracks in a row because it was our dungeon crawling podcast, and we had 1 week because it was like a grab bag of dungeon crawlers where we were doing like a support group idea, and then like the following week the following show was going to be on Mary Skelter. So like I came up with this idea. It's like, okay, how about we do like a support group thing, and I like burst in last minute being like, am I late for this thing? And I was going to talk about Mary Skelter. It's like, no, we're doing that one in 2 weeks. come back
later.
and then I think the next show Andy and I were on, and we still played like a dungeon crawling support group, like Alcoholics Anonymous. We were Dungeon Crawlers Anonymous.
I like it.
So that's how we mix it up is, you know, if we can come up with a skit, we go with the skit, but otherwise we do jokes.
So, all right.
Yeah, I just couldn't do the 3-hour marathon shows. It was too much, but it was fun. I had some good times, but,
So the chat is wondering why we have a remake of Suikoden instead of a remaster. Oh, the other way around.
I think they are remasters.
Why are they? Why do we have a remaster instead of a remake? Right? Yeah.
Because remake costs a lot of money.
And it's still Konami.
And everyone just and Konami's not going to shell out that type of money for suing.
Almost every answer to any kind of decision like that is money.
Cost too much, won't make enough. The end.
Exactly. Now I would love it. It would be great. Well, maybe. Oh, yeah. Love it.
All the fans maybe. Of the game love when they do a remaster, unless they mess it up. Like, well, isn't there a remaster that just came out that messed things up? Everyone says, screw this.
Which one?
I don't think there. I do know the one for Tales of Berseria didn't really. It didn't land well.
Like, someone was talking about it last week or a week before. It was like a recent remake. They were like, no, just play the original instead. Oh, Dragon Quest VII. The newest Dragon Quest VII.
No.
You like it?
I loved it.
As is? Okay, people are saying the original was better. I remember we had that discussion on this show.
And isn't it on 3DS as well?
That's also... You know, Dalendar, you've played all these. I'll shut up.
I only played Reimagined. It was actually the first Dragon Quest I had played, but still boils down to the same point of that I was considering for this, of the reason we don't have more remakes is a lot of the people just want the same game that already, they want their nostalgia. So if you change it, it's like the same group that doesn't like Final Fantasy VII remake. Like they want, it's not
I don't
Final
know
Fantasy
that, VII. See, I don't consider FF7 to be a remake.
Yeah, Chris, let me answer the DQ7 thing, because I've actually played all three versions.
Oh, you have? I'm so sorry. Go for it.
I don't know why you got me mixed up with Dalendar.
I don't know what I'm doing.
We're so
true.
Similar.
You're a werecow.
I'm a werecow in the game I play. I just run around and eat grass.
So the Dragon Quest, I personally think Dragon Quest Reimagined is a very good version of the game. The issue people have is because of the cut content, which is mostly a bunch of side content to the game. The biggest one being the casino and the immigrant town, which you could basically, you know, find people in random cities and have them invite to a town to build a town. But there was some misinformation you were given when you were having that conversation, because on the Game of the Year Warp cast, where people were like, oh yeah, it's completely cut. They cut the islands completely. It's like, no, the islands are still there. The stories for those islands are still there. It's just the content tied to the islands is gone. Like the normal game content, not the story content. So the so some of that was misinformation that was provided to you.
Oh, okay.
And I've told you that before.
Yeah, but I can't.
But there's definitely a psychology to it, right? Why am I going to pay more money to get less of a thing I already had, right? So,
because the original game content for those islands maybe was bad? I don't know, though.
Regardless of the rationality, the psychology of it in the consumer's mind is going to be...
Well, because it's new and it's got redone models and voice acting and all this other stuff. That
Yeah, I honestly found Reimagined to be a very good, polished game overall. I beat it in 36 hours.
My question is more like,
I played it on super easy, but
is there a third category between remaster, remake, and then whatever Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is?
Rebirth's got to be like a, or you mean like a remake where they change a lot instead of just
remaking
it
the same
way? Like with new battle systems and
reimagining
new story.
Yeah, see, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is more of a reimagined Final Fantasy VII and not really a...
Which is funny because Dragon Quest VII is the one that's with the subtitle of Reimagined.
All they reimagined was making the characters look like puppets. They also removed a number of first time like monsters from the game.
I've heard this most recent remake is too easy. That's the big complaint I've heard.
It can be pretty easy.
Which, when it comes to Dragon Quest, just looking at that specifically, was it Dragon Quest 1 where it was too difficult, no one could win, then they just haven't been able to find the right difficulty balance for these games, it looks like.
I think they were slightly different dev teams, though. Because there's like some changes in Dragon Quest 1 and 2 that make no sense, or that do make sense, But then Dragon Quest VII Reimagined doesn't have those specific changes. The biggest one that I can always think of is the treasure chest. So in Dragon Quest, you have three keys. You have the thief key, you have the magic key, you have the ultimate key. And in Dragon Quest One and Two remake, they made the chest look different depending on which key you needed to open it. Like, obviously, the ultimate key could open every chest, but like some chests you could only open with the magic key. Some chests you could only open with the thief key. Obviously, if you had the magic key, you could open the thief key one, but you couldn't get the magic key without the thief key. So, anyways, in Dragon Quest VII Reimagined, there's treasure chests, and every single treasure chest looks the exact same. So you don't know if you need, you know.
Well, that's annoying.
Yeah, so you go, you get the thief key, go back to one of this chests, and there's a chest like in your starting town that takes the ultimate key. Like, literally, the starting town has a chest that takes the final key you get in the game.
All right.
That's annoying.
Yeah. All right, so back to Suikoden.
Back to Suikoden.
How do we get to that?
No, okay, yeah, but there's a lot of backtracking.
Ah, right.
circled all the way back to where we were, backtracking again. But since the world map area is kind of small, I think it was a cost-cutting decision to not build as many environments. And a lot of the environments, to me, are very plain and lacking. It's the earlier PS2-ish days, right? It was lower budget than some of the other, you know, competitors were, of course, you know, Final Fantasy 10 and 12 and such. So you can kind of see it, but the story I like, the characters are pretty cool. There's a lot of dialogue. It's not voiced. So people who complain about that, I don't care, but I grew up playing RPGs, not voiced. Right. So, I could take it or leave it. But the running back and forth through the same environments to get to places, because you just don't walk on an over map. It's more of a, you know, the little pathways, and you go from node to node. And so you have to go from node to node to node. And then when you get there, you have to run through two or three screens and then be able to access to the next node. So if anything, that annoys me and wears on me after a bit. But the rest of the gameplay and the story are pretty good.
Worth revisiting. Suikoden 3 for me was a game when I first played it, I almost immediately noped after loving 1 and 2, but I haven't gone back to it since like its release. So worth revisiting. Oh,
wow. Yeah. No, I also liked it back in the day. So if you didn't like it then, you may still not like it. I enjoyed it. For some reason, I just have a fondness for the Suikodens that I don't have as much patience with in other RPGs of its era at times. So.
I have more patience now than I did as I'm assuming teen. I think I was like 14 when it came out. So,
yeah, I think it's pretty cool and a decent story. I wish there was more recurring characters like 1 and 2 had. There's some, but not as many. And there's a few little surprise twists in there. But I'd recommend it.
Okay.
I'll see if I can struggle through 4 or not. That's, I remember being very disappointed when I heard the news about 4, and it was getting kind of rough reviews, and they drop you from having 6 people in your party to 4. It's the only Suikoden game that does that. You have 108 characters, why are you going to lower how many are in your party?
Well, and I mean, there were other changes that I do like the item management in 4 was much better.
Okay.
It was more like other RPGs, you know, like Final Fantasies and whatnot, where you just could buy like stacks of 99 and you could use it from the item thing instead of having to actually equip them and such. So it was better on the item management. But yeah, the 4 party member thing, because I think they were trying to go for more like how other RPGs were doing it. And then you had the atrocious world map.
It's all sailing, right?
Yeah, it was all sailing. Oh my god, just
what? And a high encounter rate, I hear.
High encounter rate, slow traveling. I mean, it like whoever came up with the idea for boat travel, and I'm not just talking Suikoden 4 here. I'm talking any game where your primary
ease games
way of traveling
Those mid-2000s liked water travel. You had the Zelda, you had Wind Waker, mm-hmm. you had this, or I think there's a few others that kind of, it was a little fad for a bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was same thing with, like, the card game system. There was, like, a whole series of card games there in the early 2000s, too, because you had Lost Kingdom, you had the Phantasy Star Online Episode 3 cards. Bat and Katos was during that time. So there was, like, this trend again. You always see this trend towards, like, innovation in gaming, and then everybody copies the trend, and some of those trends are not good. And now we're seeing card systems come back with all these roguelikes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, they've been back. It's been a while since that trend started.
I'd argue, though, on the inventory system. Again, I haven't used 4. I think it's kind of very Suikoden-ish, or to have something unique about it to do the inventory system the way they do, to where you get that you have to equip it. So it's in. There's a bit of strategy there, right? You either equip. You have 3 open slots. You could either put consumables there, or you could put, equipment in those slots to buff up your character. So, I think there's a little bit of a decision trade-off there that has more impact than just being annoying, right? Now the one thing I don't like is how limited your overall inventory is. So if it gets full really quick, and then you got to start dropping stuff or going back to your castle and depositing it into your chest, and I know realistically that makes more sense, and it's probably more Western RPG-ish to have inventory limits either based on strength or grid slice slots, but in a Japanese RPG, I find it's just a nuisance and not fun. But
and then you have the Eurojank games that Herfrog plays, where you can just pick up everything.
Yeah,
or if at least they were going to do that, maybe make it like there was that one at least Fire Emblem game where you just had a merchant cart follow you around.
There's several of those.
Only played the one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing I was playing before those was Hades 2, which I enjoy. I beat Hades 1 and 100%ed it on Steam. And this one, I can do it pretty well. I was making good progress. It seems, I don't know. It's not, I like it. I don't like it as much as I liked Hades 1. And it seems more repetitive. And I just got tired of it, to be honest. How many more times are going to run through the same thing with the same arrangements? It starts just getting second nature, and I'm probably really close to finishing it.
Did it just not have as many options for you to swap between when you do each run, or did you only like using certain sets?
I've used all the sets and bounced between them. And well, I follow the little challenges or whatever they set up for you, right? Where it, like, highlights a certain weapon to use in do these challenges. So I kind of started following those. I just it got old and I couldn't do it anymore. And I'm trying to be much better at finishing games these days, but
I've heard with Hades 2, it's better at what it does better, but it's more of the same. That's what I've kind of heard.
I agree with that. And I didn't care about the story. So all the story stuff, and normally I'm a big story person, but, and I like when it really adds to the game, but to me, I just started, okay, skip. And even though a lot of the voice acting is usually pretty good in the Hades games. So it's kind of a shame in my mind for me to do it, but I'm like, all right, I just need to get to this next. I want to get this done.
Oh, Katisberger says he's waiting for a Suikoden Souls-like.
I don't know how that would work. That'd be interesting. I just want anything Suikoden. That'd be cool, but
You tried the gacha game?
No.
Okay.
I want something actually Suikoden-ish, not just Suikoden name on it. modern, but yeah, they're not getting my hopes up. The only thing that'd be cool is they did a 3 remaster or an HD remaster or something, but then kind of don't want them to do that now since I just replayed it selfishly, right? I was like, well, I'm not going to go play that again, but
I mean,
that's what I've been playing for the last month or two.
Nice.
I'll still check out the Suikoden Gacha just because it's supposed to follow at least like part of the scope, like what happens between two and three or before one, like
yeah, before one.
Oh, that's the Gaiden, right? The with
Yeah, no, yeah, Suikoden Gaiden is the story between like two
two
and
and three.
three.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are the visual novel ones down there. The gacha takes
Yes.
place before one.
I combined the two. I hadn't played the Gaiden ones or Suikoden Starleaf, which isn't out yet.
I would be interested in the guidance.
Wait, I thought Starleaf was supposed to be already out.
It isn't on Steam anyway. I'm trying to confirm if it is on mobile.
Oh, I wonder if it got pushed back. Because I thought it was supposed to be already out. Ooh.
Yeah. I hope that I selfishly, even if it's a gacha like this, I hope that it all does well, just because the better everything Suikoden does, the more likely Konami's going to let more continue.
I just hope it does well enough to maybe get an offline version. That's good.
All right. I want to hear what's good that you've been playing, Tam.
I mean, do you want me to talk gotchas or do you want me to say how I hurt myself?
Oh. That sounds
You don't hurt
cruel.
yourself with
Is
gotchas?
that if you want?
No, I
Yeah.
actually hurt myself playing so I booted up Clair Obscur Expedition 33 the other day. Just because
Okay.
I was like, I kind of feel like playing a little bit of this. I have all this extra content because, I did beat the base game here on our channel. And so I was doing some of the extra content, and I ended up spraining my index finger and wrist. Because this is the post game stuff, so it's the hard, like some of the hardest fights in the game, and I injured myself doing the parrying. However, when I was playing it, I did notice they made some nice quality of life changes for people who may have had some concerns. Andy. And now you still have to do like all the parrying and dodging and jumping and stuff, which is, especially with the fights I was doing, very, very hard because you're repeatedly trying to do parries for like long attack chains from the monsters. That's how I injured myself. But the monsters where but they added a thing where you don't have to worry about the successes of your attack. So you don't have to worry about like hitting X, really fast two times in a row or whatever. So that was one of the nice quality of life changes. There was another quality of life change that is handy if you're fighting small monsters, and that it doesn't have the dynamic camera where it'll be shifting cameras to better view the battlefield as you're like dodging and doing attacks, which works on small enemies. But I found some of the bigger enemies that are partially off the camera screen, that doesn't work for because they're so far off the screen that some of their attacks you can't see the in the t try and see the right timing for.
Isn't
So
that
that
great?
yeah, so it's kind of like a give and take, but the button one, at least as far as the attacking side goes, again, you still have to do it for defense. That is an excellent quality of life thing. Because some of those button presses, it's not as bad as like some of the ones for Legend of Dragoon, where you had to, like, they were super fast indicators that were overlapping. It's never that bad, but at least, again, if you had a concern about, timing your attacks and whatnot, so you get the best successes, that is not a concern anymore.
Cool. That's good to hear. I might
Yeah,
pick that
so.
up and just blaze through it with that on.
Yeah, well, you still have to worry about the, again, the dodging, the parrying, the jumping, all that side of things, but you don't have to worry about the attack side, so it at least eases it up a little bit. Unless you hurt yourself, like I did.
Don't do that. Don't hurt yourself playing Expedition 33.
Yeah. But again, I was fighting like, again,
Is that our
the
question of the
really
week? What game is worth getting injured to play?
that is a
That is a
odd question.
question. I don't know if it's a good one.
I don't know. I remember the NES controller hand blisters as kids, thumb blisters.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't think of a
N64
video game
blister from
injury.
the frickin' stick.
Oh yeah, doing that, putting your palm and
Yeah.
spinning them.
Nunchucking your friend with the Wii U.
Don't nunchuck your friends with a Wii U remote. What are you doing?
But am I wrong? That did happen.
Yeah, it's wrong to do it, but yeah, okay.
No, like you guys were like maybe doing something where you're swinging around. Whoops.
No. Why would I? Well, all right. Yeah. But
I mean, that
a nunchuck implies is at the end of the string. Why would it be like dangling so that I can whap them?
Well, it slips out and you're basically nunchucking them. They were called nunchucks.
I guess they are because they got the other half of the controller tethered to it. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a thing. Not necessarily a good thing, but it was a thing.
I just played games boring, I guess. I didn't have any of these injuries.
Yeah, if you're not destroying your TV or causing major injuries to your family.
The TV was usually because people got pissed off and threw their controllers at it. Mm-hmm. I actually had a roommate who broke the microwave that way. He threw it and it...
broke the microwave?
Yeah. So
why were they playing the Wii on their microwave?
No, it was an Xbox, actually. But, yeah, no,
The Xbox is a microwave, or they had the Xbox in the microwave to fix the red ring? What is going on? I'm so lost.
The entertainment center had the TV, and then the microwave was in the shelf under it.
No! Now, why?
Military barracks.
Why did you put a microwave?
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. A military barracks with no kitchen, by the way.
All
right. Okay. So then they would put it under. So and then they had like an Xbox, you know, below that. Well, one of my roommates got really mad at the game he was playing, threw his controller, and it broke the front glass of the microwave door, but not both. So because it is an insulated glass thing, it's usually double paneled.
Mm-hmm.
So he broke one half, but not the other.
Good all the microwave job. Waves that were sneaking out and cooking your guys' brains through school. Didn't even realize it.
Yep.
Yeah. The maintenance finally saw it one day and said something and replaced it.
Did they ask how it was broken?
I think they did, but I wasn't in the room. But I, from my understanding, they did not tell the truth.
Get demerits. Demotions? What do you get in the military? You get potato peeling duty. That's what the movies say.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. All right.
They would actually, you'd have to reimburse it from your pay.
Well, that is one way to make sure you don't throw your controllers at the microwave.
Yeah. Okay. So with all that, I think that brings us to Dalinar.
You?
Oh, to me.
Yes. Dalinar's got all the demos.
Yes.
So
let's do him last. Project Gorgon.
He's going to be covered during the news with the demos.
Oh. Well, whatever.
I have one non-demo. Go ahead.
There we go.
Oh, okay. My bad.
One demo that's not part of the news. Sorry.
All right. Let me give you my update. I'm still a cow. All right. That's my update. That's Project Gorgon. Hi.
Moo moo.
Are you still enjoying being a cow?
Yes.
Okay.
I play this game too much. I'm going to have to stop playing it at some point.
I mean, what else are you going to play?
I don't know. I just want to play this.
Just play this.
That's a problem.
No, don't. I've told you, Chris. Own what you play. If you sound like you are regretting what you're playing, we're going to make fun of you. Just own it.
Okay. It doesn't matter what I play. You're going to make fun of me.
I think Chris always sounds like he regrets what he's playing.
There is some of that, too, yeah.
I regret that I have to make a choice.
Well, I can't
play everything is my problem. I can't be that super educated video games ombudsman who knows, that's the wrong word, who knows everything about everything. And I can be a specialist in a game, yes, but the games I like enough to become a specialist in, nobody else cares about. So Chris, I don't know what to do.
Should I just like gift box you a copy of Box Room?
What?
Box Room.
I don't know what that is.
It is a simulation game that allows you to make a room to house your Steam collection in.
Mm.
Kind of like, you know, how people have shelves and whatnot displaying their game cases and everything. Well, this is a virtual...
How big is the room?
Do what?
How big is the room in the game? We might have an issue.
You can make it bigger.
Oh, okay. Good.
What foolish person would buy lots of furniture to house old media kit?
People do. I mean, people do it.
Jonathan does it. That's a self-deprecating joke.
Half the people here have done it.
I have rooms in my house dedicated to it.
I have converted closet doors. They're painted black. I have that are used as shelving for my games. Like old closet doors that we took down because we remodeled the closet. We took the doors, we painted them black. We got some nice glass blocks to like make a. I have a ghetto shelving unit.
Okay.
For my games.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to visualize. What do you mean? You put the door on the wall?
No. Like we flipped them sideways. They're like stacked like shelves. And they're held up by some cinder blocks on the bottom. And then they have some glass blocks in between the shelves to make them look kind of fancy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, are these beveled doors? Because that'd be annoying trying to slide stuff because mine have those little.
No, these are the doors that would fold in and out.
Okay. Like the accordion looking doors?
Yeah, but they're solid. They're not like with the slats.
Ah, interesting. All right. I'm trying to visualize it.
I'll take a picture here when I feel like getting up.
I've reached that opposite point where I have an apartment that's too small to put any type of shelving out for my ridiculous amount of games. But if I wanted to have a house, the only way I'd be able to get it is if I sold all my games. So to get the room, I would need to get rid of the 30 plus year collection.
It's the dilemma, right? You get all the space, and then nothing to put in it, or you keep all the stuff and you have no place to put it.
Yep, and half the time I still end up going, I know the games are inside that tote. I just don't want to lift the cover and play any of them right now.
One of the dilemmas I have now, or two. One, I have a lot of these on like my PS2 loader, right? Mm-hmm. Why do I keep this disc when the better experience is to not even play off the disc and damage it, right? So is it a shelf decoration? No. So I kind of wore in my head a little bit about some of those games and maybe some of the, you know, the multi carts or the like the Crix carts or whatever. I can't think of the term for them right now. Mm-hmm. That I have. So why do I keep all the other carts? And then I still have a lot of sealed games, and not because I was collecting them to be sealed. I just bought them, like a lot of PS2 DS games that this is great. I'll play it one day. And I didn't open it right away and I put it on my shelf, and now they're 20, 25 years old and they're still sealed. And I was like, just by opening this, I'm like cutting the value in half, or I could just sell the sealed one and buy an already opened one, you know, but then that takes work. So they just kind of sit there stuck on my shelf sealed.
Depending on the game, you could just sell the sealed version and then you have yourself like a paid vacation, 3 days off work because it covers you. It covers the amount of wage you have made.
Yeah. Or do I go and get some of those graded, even though I personally am not into that and don't collect those at all. But, you know, would that make them more collectible or valuable? I don't know. So I think about these. And so in order not to even deal with it, they just stay on my shelf. Mm-hmm. It's like a paralysis of action.
Yep. Definitely know that. And as much as I espouse, I want my problem to be choice with the amount of good games out there. I want to go I can't decide everything is great. It still comes down to everything is great. Now I have to decide between 400 games and then I end up playing nothing because paralysis of choice, right?
So what I do for that, I do that. I'm a big reader and I collect books. And to pick my next book, I have a spreadsheet and I have a little RNG algorithm built in to pick my next book for me.
Interesting.
So I build my library of things I'd like to read. And then so I don't have to pick the next one. Or maybe I'll have that pick a book that I probably wouldn't go and ever choose. Yeah. And it'll get me to play more things that I may not have chose, or sorry, read more things that I may not have chosen.
Have you incidentally heard of Princesses of the Pizza Parlor?
No.
It's by Gaijin.
Staffer.
Yeah. Michael Yarimizu, Gaijin Monogatari.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he actually writes books.
Oh, cool. No, I didn't know that.
Thought of random like that is something that I used to do quite frequently. Actually, I have, like, for watching an anime every once in a while, I have an Annie database where it has random anime. So I click that. If I can find it, I watch it, or at least watch 4 episodes. If, same thing for movies. Go suggest me movie, select random movie, and whatever comes up, if I can find it, I watch it. And I've tried doing similar when it comes to games and books. Books is, I think I may have found one recently for books, but for video games, I only ever found one for all video games or everything I have in my Steam database. And I just don't want to take the time to make the, you know, 800 game spreadsheet if I put in everything that I own physically just to pick something. So well, it's very tempting, but the amount of time would take too much.
You heard Chris earlier. You could probably get an AI script to go and scrape your Steam catalog, put them in a list, and pick and create a random RNG next game algorithm in there for you, and you just hit a little button, say next game.
From it was probably two or three years ago now, there was a conversation we had about a program called Play Night.
Yeah,
and I still use that for it. Has a random
I have
game
that.
Selection on it, yeah. So it actually can take everything from not just Steam, like all the free Epic games I got. So I use that whenever a game goes on a really good sale on Steam and I wonder why it isn't on my wish list and why I don't own it. So I bring up Play Night and look to see if I own it on Epic.
I will admit, I did buy the Breath of Fire 4 when it was on sale, and I only paid $1.49 because I had already put some money into my Steam account for something else.
Yeah. Good deal for it then at $1.49.
Yeah, I had to put $5 on the Steam account. It was $5 for the game, and then it's like, well, I got it for $1.49 because I still have money left over from the other thing I bought.
You can use that to buy hats in a video game or something.
I don't play Team Fortress 2.
Oh,
gun skins.
Gun skins, yes.
Or for me, because I happen to like a lot of things that are indie related as well, $1.49 has sometimes gotten me 4 or 5 games. Before we end up going too far away from Chris, I see on the write-up you put a game I haven't heard of called Rackcoin.
Yes, Rackcoin is a coin pusher game. So if you haven't heard of this...
Oh, I saw someone play this.
Yeah, so Rackcoin... it is a coin pusher roguelike, if that makes any sense, where you play one of those games where you put the coin, wow, that's loud. 1 second. You put the coins into the machine, they come down and the goal is to put them in the right, you know, aim where they go and use it to push more coins out of the machine. And if this were like a fair or something, you would get like tickets and then turn in for a prize. Well, here your goal is more counted, like just how many Well, actually, you do get tickets as well. So your goal is to get the most tickets. There's a goal for each run. There's difficulty levels. There's different machines. There's different extra special coins and power-ups you can get. So just think it's Balatro, but coin machines. But it's not like the moody, cool music for Balatro. It's more like, what would crazy coin machines do? And I got a video on screen, and there's all sorts of crazy power-ups and stuff you can have. I've played it very little. I have not gotten any cool crazy power-ups. I'm in the very early stages, but I love the idea of coin machine games. I love playing them in real life, and so I'm looking forward to getting deeper into this one.
Looks very addicting. Yep. It reminded me briefly of a game you had played on stream a couple of months ago, and I do not remember the name.
Was it Cloverfield by any chance, or Clover Pit, the slot machine game?
Yes,
because that just got an update last week or the week before. And I played a little bit of that as well. I forgot to put it on the sheet. They've added some more special challenge modes, and they've added some new feature to combine certain lucky charms that you get in the game. So like there's a whole bunch of new things to collect. And so I'm trying to do good runs on it. I have a problem though. When I play Clover Pit, I stay up way too late, because I just want to do another run until one goes well. And then one goes well, but I don't accomplish all my goals in it. And it's like, well, let's do another run. Surely this one will also go well. And then I want to do another run and then another run. And so it's a problem. Clover Pit's can be a big killing your sleep problem. But I love it, and I think it's fun, and I'm glad they had a little DLC update.
Definitely a lot of games that are just enjoyable dopamine from the sounds of it.
We should jump into what you've been playing now, I think.
Yeah, so outside of the demos, which will come up during our news, there was one I wanted to highlight. I did a editorial for last week of Lurks Within Walls. We did a interview with the developer, and I've been very interested in this horror dungeon crawler that, from looking at it with for 1 second, we'll get an immediate nope from Tam, because it is very creepy and aesthetically survival horror, which, as someone who typically, when I play survival horror, there's a lot of stealth that seems to be involved, and I'm horrible at stealth. I want guns blazing, move forward the whole time, which means if I play a Resident Evil, I run out of ammo and I end up dying.
Mm.
But in Lurks Within Walls, it's a wizardry-like first-person turn-based dungeon crawler. So you have all the horror elements, the really cool and creepy monster designs from Trevor Henderson, who's a good artist out there. And you have this survival horror story with the atmosphere, tense atmosphere and music behind it, while still being able to go, okay, I can stand still and figure out what's going on around me. Oh, what was that noise? Like, it's just...
this is creepy.
Such a feast for the senses, in a way, and has such an interesting story, even within the demo aspect, where you're basically in a infested like apartment complex, and your security guard in the basement, and something escaped, and you're like, okay, what's going on? And as you slowly move around, you see, like, this door is unlocked. Why is this person not living in here right now? Or, like, what happened to the doctors that were here earlier? Things like that. And
are there satisfying answers to these questions? Or is it just atmosphere?
In the demo?
No, not in the demo.
Necessarily, yeah. There's enough for me to want to see what the answers are.
Got it.
For sure. Because the demo has a had a contained story with the security guard that woke up. There's, as far as I know, a few different ways that it can end. But, like, you turn on the generator, go to the elevator, and it gets attacked. And then it cuts to a police officer who comes in afterwards from outside of the apartment complex. It's like, okay, they're inside the parking garage, for example. So, you know, and first thing you do is start walking towards an elevator, demo ends. So it's like, okay, are you going to come across, like, the something eating the security guard you just played as? Is he going to become infected? And you're going to have to be like, secretly, I know this person's going to turn on me, but my character doesn't know that, so they joined the party. Like, I don't know for sure. Like, these aren't things that were mentioned in the interview necessarily as possibilities, but either way, just having that tense atmosphere with amazing monster designs, that I'm here for it. Let's see how far they can go.
I'm going to be yes, hard nope. No surprise by anybody.
No, that's I like when they blend genres and ways like this, where it's like, oh, I didn't expect that, but it really works well. And as I said at the beginning, I'm a fan of survival horror, but survival horror by its nature wants you to play slow and methodically. And I tend to be a person who thinks a lot slowly and methodically. So when I go into my escapism for playing games, I tend to be the opposite. Like, Dying Light 2, another game where there's some stealth sections and you're in a post-apocalyptic zombie-filled world, you're supposed to sneak through this area and make it to an exit. How I ended up beating that area was by running faster. So, like, I found the perfect way. All six of the things are like, as soon as they touch you, you're dead. I'm like, I'll run faster than they can get me.
I'll just run fast.
So
classic strategy. Run away.
Exactly. I'm surprised it worked. It probably wasn't supposed to. So
well, survival horror. I think now that you are supposed to do that in a lot of those.
Well, I'm more confused than I was.
Oh.
Apparently, the Suikoden Star Leap manga, which is based on the gacha game that they're making, is on chapter 3 and being released. So I'm just further confused with how this
gacha game
must have gotten delayed.
You just doing your shopping? I don't blame you.
Yeah.
But like, yeah.
Trying to confirm if Star Leap's out yet.
Yeah, right.
Or why it's not out yet.
Why
isn't
it out yet?
Because I thought it was supposed to be out already.
Hmm. Fair enough.
So, okay. Carry on. I'm sorry.
That's most of what I had for the game here. There's not too much that ends up being able to be said about, which will come up in our news as well. I play Lurks Within Walls for about an hour, and that got me through the entire game, beginning to end of the demo at least once. So once you get more gameplay into it, there's a lot more that can be said. But in the meantime, it's just a cool looking game.
I think we've run out of games.
I guess so. Let's get into feedback. What was our question of the week, Tam?
So last week we asked, what is your comfort game if you're sick or not feeling great? So, anyone on the panel got something before we go into the actual responses?
Was that the one part that wasn't updated properly, or because the actual answers we received weren't in regards to that question?
No.
I think that's the
answers
were
all
top answered.
5 RPGs, it seems like.
Oh, say what?
I was a little confused, but I wasn't sure. Okay. I'm like, did I just forget?
I did pull this from the website. So did we put the wrong thing in the website?
Oh, probably. Yeah, that sounds like something I do.
One of our answers has I think the question of the week in the description is different than the one mentioned on the podcast.
Whoops.
So we typed it in on the website. What is your comfort game if you're sick or not?
We didn't type it in. I just didn't change the template. I pasted in there. Shoot. I'll fix it. So what did we get for top fives then?
All right. So let me go back to, whatever the question was last week, picking just five from Strawberry Eggs, one of our staffers, picking just five RPGs is very tough for me. I'm cheating a bit with this list, but here goes. Number five, Pokemon Black/White. More so White because that's the game I picked. Pokemon hasn't quite reached the height of the fifth generation since. Completely new Pokemon until the post-game, best story out of the mainline game, characters who actually undergo character development, great music, and just overall an excellent game. Number 4. The World's Ends With You. A hugely original game with a wonderful battle system, excellent music, a fantastic story and characters, and just so stylish. Number 3. Devil Survivor Overclocked. It has to be the 3DS port, because the voice acting takes the already fantastic story and elevates it above and beyond the original DS title. The battle system is fun and challenging, too. Number 2, Bravely Second Endlayer. It's not just a better game than the original, or even Bravely Default 2, but it is an amazing game in its own right. It just does so much well. And I'm not surprised by reading this for number one. Tales of Symphonia and Tales of Symphonia Dawn of a New World. Even though the original is in many ways the superior game to Dawn of the New World, I cannot bring myself to love one game over the other. They are both so wonderful and so important to me. I can't quite decide if I prefer Tui or Devil Survivor more, so this isn't fixed. I also really want to rank a Fire Emblem, but I can't even decide if I like Path of Radiance, Fire Emblem Echoes, or the Three Houses more. That's a pretty varied list.
Pretty good.
Yeah, with Devil Survivor on there.
Yeah,
it's underrated.
Gamer Esquire responded, number one, Secret of Mana, SNES. Purchased my SNES more than 30 years ago to play this game, and it remains my favorite of all time. Number two, Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology, 3DS. Criminally underrated title that too few fans of the genre have experienced. The characters, Yoko Shimomura soundtrack, and story are all top tier. Grid-based system with positioning element added a strategic element to turn-based combat that I loved. Number three, Skies of Arcadia, GameCube. I think the time in life that I experienced this game has a great deal to do with how much I value it. Best world map in any RPG, bar none. Love the airship combat, character interactions, and incredible soundtrack. One of those games I never wanted to end. Number four, Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn. Wii. Peak Fire Emblem, from my perspective, loved the narrative arc, map design, soundtrack, and challenge. Number five, Octopath Traveler 2. I go back and forth as to which installment to include in this list. When Nintendo showed the first game during the 2017 Switch reveal presentation, I knew it was something special. Loved the individual character arcs, HD 2D graphics, and absolutely stellar soundtrack. Octopath Traveler 2 carried forward everything the first game did well and somehow identified ways to improve the experience. OT series gives me hope for the future of the genre. As Strawberry's Eggs noted, picking a top 5 is extremely challenging. Chrono Trigger, Brigandon, Legend of Forsenia, PS1, Final Fantasy Tactics, Final Fantasy VI, all could have been on this list depending on the day. And then I
appreciate the shout out for Brigandine Legend of Forsenia there, and for my teasing of Gamer Esquire. So you played Secret of Mana 30 years ago. It's all been downhill since, huh?
Visions of Mana is very good, my friend.
Even Secrets,
number one game.
I tried to go back. I love Secrets. I played it when I was in school in the 90s when it came out, and then I went back to play it way later, and I was like, "Oh, this is kind of rougher than I remember."
Guolingo replied on our YouTube channel, top five RPGs was a tough list for me to make. Sorry, that was a spam phone call. Top five RPGs was a tough list for me to make. Also, I think the question of the week in the description is different than the one mentioned
on the podcast.
I just
fixed it. I fixed it.
Number one, Disco Elysium. I've heard very good things about that. Number two, Chrono Trigger. Number three, Final Fantasy VI. Number four, Xenogears. And number five, Emerald Beyond.
I don't know that one.
I don't know that one. Nope. Yeah, no, I'm...
It's a Saga game.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember if it's like a Saga Emerald Beyond, I think.
Yeah, Saga Emerald Beyond. I think that's the newest, like, new one.
Yes.
So,
and it is just Saga. I wasn't sure if it was like Unlimited Saga or something like that, but yeah, it's just
no,
Saga.
Unlimited Saga is a different game. That one sucks ass.
How do you really feel though?
I'm not a big fan of Saga, and I think it sucks ass.
Yeah, no, I'm getting that impression. Yeah.
Like I like most Saga games are not ones I enjoy. I enjoy bits and pieces of them. I own just about everyone that's been released, and I've played most of them. Not like played through them, just played them. And Unlimited Saga is the worst of the series by most people's estimations.
Still top of my list of ones to play.
play everyone, all the other ones besides that one first. Some people really hate Saga 3, which is Final Fantasy Legends 3. I really like Legends 3. So, but even Landale up to that point had done like every path on Saga games. When he played it for his RPG quest, he only did one and was like, I'm done.
This just makes it seem more like I need to know why it's that bad. So I gotta play it.
Yeah. So, So are we going with the question of the new question of the week being what is a game you think is worth hurting yourself for? Or no?
I don't know. You may get all the answers you'd expect out of that question like that.
Yeah.
Maybe just make it the question you wanted it to be and didn't do.
No, because that was.
Well,
a
we've done that before.
Question.
We actually did do that question in a previous show.
Yeah, it's just Chris messed up the website.
I did.
Scar's like hurt so good. Come on, baby, make it hurt so good. Scar wants the pain. I don't think war has counted, Scar, even if that was mental trauma.
I know. All right. Down.
And I think that means we don't know what our question of the week is.
you guys can discuss it. I'm opening up the new stuff real quick since...
Oh my gosh, I also didn't open the new stuff. What's wrong with me?
You're too busy being a cow.
I am, but that's no excuse. First story. Clock.
Oh, hold up. You could ask, what do people prefer? Remasters, remakes, or reimaginings on their games?
Ooh, that's so much better.
That is better.
That's why we pay you the big bucks, Jonathan.
Thank you. What do you prefer?
That's why they keep me around every 6 to 8 months.
But that one doesn't have a link. Okay. I know about that one, though.
Right. Cool.
All right. So, I guess beeping?
Beep, 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 beep,
beep. In the news, roguelite action RPG Clockfall announced. Radical Theory and Reaver Games announced roguelike action RPG Clockfall, the game, which time management and village defense... I think that's supposed to be with time management and village defense mechanics, is set to hit Steam early access later this year.
Okay, cool.
Might be something up your alley there, Chris?
I don't know. It's pretty
actiony.
Yeah, it's actiony, but not in like the loot grindy build creation way of a Path of Exile. It's more like the button spammy action RPG, but also I guess you can build your base or something. Oh. Mm-hmm. It looks neat. Oh, I just probably wouldn't get to it. Wow. My husband just came in the chat and said, I want better news noises than what you just did. And it's like, I did what I had, what I could.
Honestly, it was a little weaker this week than most weeks, Chris.
It's just me. Multiple people are supposed to do it. Beep. You said beep once. All right, fair enough.
I said it more than once.
I wasn't sure if Chris was going for chicken beeps or normal beeps. It was like this weird thing, and it just... I mean, we just need someone to sound like Beaker every week. Scar wants more beeps. I heard
farting noises and toilet flushing.
What?
That's not what I did.
Kind of sounded like.
Oh, that's the toilet flush. Okay, yeah. There you go. All right, now we went blue. Now we're moving on. I hope Pause is happy.
Warhammer Classics titles released on Steam. SNEG has joined forces with Games
that's
Workshop.
So many.
Various developer and publisher partners to create the Warhammer Classics label. The label's launch sees various classic Warhammer's title newly available, updated, and bundled on Steam. Wow, that is a list.
Too many lists. Too much list.
Warhammer, Shadow of the Horned Rat, Final Liberation, Warhammer Epic 40K, Warhammer 40K Chaos Gate, Warhammer 40K Rites of War, Warhammer Dark Omen, Warhammer 40K Fire Warrior, Warhammer Mark of Chaos Gold Edition, Space Hulk Ascension, Warhammer 40K Armageddon, Warhammer 40K Sanctus Reach, Talisman Horus Heresy, Talisman Digital Classic Edition, Talisman Origins, Man O' War Corsair, Warhammer Naval Battles, Warhammer Quest to the End Times, Legacy of Dorne, Herald of Oblivion, Warhammer Underworlds, Shakespeare Edition, Warhammer 40K Dawn of War Anniversary Edition, Warhammer 40K Dawn of War 2 Anniversary Edition, Chainsaw Warrior Lords of Night, Dark Future, Blood Red States, Space Hulk Tactics, Battlefleet Gothic Armada, Blood Bowl Chaos Edition, Blood Bowl 2 Legendary Edition. That is
no,
a list.
It's too much.
I bought some of those.
You have paralysis of choice.
I have bought some of those on Steam already. What is with this?
Oh, that too. And I just bought a few more from the sale. Though you oohed probably the worst game on the entire list.
I what now?
You went ooh on the Fire Warrior.
Well, it's more of the fact that that was a PS2 game.
Yeah, and that people hated it.
Maybe it'll be better on PC, because it's at least that has PC controls, maybe. Doubt it.
Only one I played was Shadow of the Horned Rat.
Isn't Talisman a board game?
It is.
Yep.
But it's a, I didn't know it was a Warhammer game.
It's not. They made a Talisman Warhammer crossover.
Oh.
Yeah. Why? And I'm a big, I actually have like all the old Talisman box game, tabletop games. Grew up playing that thing.
2D adventure RPG Midnight Souls revealed. Developer Spaghetti Cat unveiled 2D adventure RPG Midnight Souls, featuring dark humor. The game sees players travel to a distant small town for a date with their online girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
All right.
This seems odd.
It's like River City plus Earthbound? I don't know what it is. It's weird.
And there's horror stuff?
And there's a cat in a mine cart. Of course there is. I don't know what's happening.
Why wouldn't there be one?
It looks like you get drunk with the dad.
Yeah.
That's what probably leads to you putting the cat in the minecart with a phone.
Apparently you slap a ghost pig while playing Wheel of Fortune? What is this game? All right, fine. All right.
Midnight Beat 'em up action RPG, The Concrete Sutra, number one announced. The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa developer Yeo revealed new title, The Concrete Sutra number one. The beat 'em up action RPG is planned to release on Steam next March. And apparently it has a trailer, and that is definitely
that a beat 'em up. Yeah. Straight up side view turtles style beat 'em up.
The numbers.
Maybe it'll be more interesting than the bouncer.
Well, I like the screenshot for this next game. It's got a cow with majestic horns in it.
Yeah, Sword Haven Iron Conspiracy free story expansion coming in May. Adam Team revealed it is releasing a free story expansion for Sword Haven Iron Conspiracy. The Cursed City will arrive in the fantasy CRPG in May, and that is definitely a bovine. That is a very majestic bovine. I'm digging this bovine.
Yeah. Oh, and there's dinosaurs too, apparently, with feathers.
I mean, accurate dinosaurs.
That's right.
Dinosaurs have to eat something. Might as well be those bovines.
They like steak.
Yep.
Just like people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're the werecow.
In my wolf form, I do eat steak.
Gmode Archives plus
Yeah, good luck on this.
Saga. I'm trying to make sense of the title of this article.
Uh-huh.
So Gmode Archives Plus, Xenosaga Pied Piper, Namco Chronicle coming to PC Switch. Gmode is bringing 2004 mobile prequel Xenosaga Pied Piper and 2009 crossover strategy RPG Namco Chronicle to PC and Switch in Japanese. The company has also released Atlas Mobile Side Story 2006 Digital Devil Saga Avatar Tuner A's test server on the same platforms.
It's garbage. These just garbage? Old mobile phone games?
Yes. What? Old defunct mobile phone games.
Delightful.
You know what? Digital preservation. And I think Pied Piper was actually supposed to be pretty good. The problem was that it was stuck in Japan, so hopefully we'll see a translation. I am still
that's the niche they have carved.
It's more unofficial than official for it. So,
yeah. So Sovereign Tower extended demo and trailer released. Wild Wits and Curve Games released an extended demo for Roundtable Management RPG Sovereign Tower. It comes alongside a new trailer introducing the Bardcore singer Hildegard von Bingen,
yep,
as part of the game's cast. That is an awesome name.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's a note saying demo, so I guess Dalinar, this is one you played.
It is, yes. This one was a good continuation of what I was saying earlier of mixing genres you didn't think would quite work, because it has the... I said it's in my notes here, City Builder Dating Sim. The Dating Sim part still feels right, but City Builder's closer to... the only example I've ever had is if anyone's played Romancing the Three Kingdoms, where you're like, people will come up and ask you requests, and you're like, I'm going to send troops to help out your town. Oh, don't worry, you're famine. We're going to send some of our best engineers to help you irrigate your crops properly.
The old Koei games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I played those.
So any old Koei game type aspect there, except they have your... A sovereign inside a tower that like has been locked up. Since you unlock the doors, you're just immediately become the leader of the area. So you have these quirky characters, leaders of towns, people in the general having issues that are coming in, and they'll ask you for help, and you send your Knights of the Round Table that you have, which you slowly add more, who have like... They have attributes, like one of them will be of, I love fighting and I'm strength based. Like, okay, so you send them out to duel somebody else. That's one of the issues that's coming up is like a bandit will take over a town. It's like they're taking over the place, but they won't leave unless someone beats them. All right, send the guy who's good at strength. And if you send them on quests they don't enjoy, they will also lose like their respect for you. And some of the quests are just entertaining and a bit absurd. Like you had your court jester come in to ask your knights to send on a quest to go clean the public baths because a goose has taken it over.
Oh, you don't want to deal with a goose.
Exactly. So you have to, you can either bribe or tell the jester to go away because he stinks too bad with 5 gold, or you can send a knight to,
yeah, lose see that knight. Can. That goose gonna pretty kill much. Him.
Pretty much.
Don't fight geese.
And if that does happen,
have you seen their teeth? People say they don't have teeth. They've got 2 rows of teeth. They're scary.
And if you do lose your knight because it gets eaten by a goose, there's a demon locked in the basement that can abuse time for you to rewrite for more dialogue options and to rewrite bad quest endings.
Oh.
Okay. So opens up pretty quickly overall. There was also, usually there's just like the quests don't really have a purpose to them. To the end of what I was playing, there was a dragon knight that comes and issues a challenge, which requires reaching certain stats like your respect with the people have to be at a score of 8 when you're at score of 5 and you have 4 weeks to boost that. And you need to have a certain amount of funds as well. So you reach those stats and funds. If you do, you succeed at the challenge. If you don't, the Dragon Knight laughs at you and makes it so, you know, you lost the challenge. And yeah, it's just a quirky, weird game that they decided to combine a couple of different aspects to that I think it's cool. We'll keep an eye on.
It looks neat.
Could be something up your alley, Chris.
I know. I agree.
So next, Kataria Fables 2 announce P-Cube and Secret Level Studios and P-Cube Secret Level Studios and Twin Hearts have announced a sequel to 2021 action RPG Kataria Fables. Kataria Fables 2 will follow 2 new heroes in the new Arcadira Peninsula region. So the our article does state this is takes place after the events of the first game. So yeah, there may be stuff that follows up, but apparently furries.
Mm-hmm. You play as a rabbit or something?
Yeah, it looks like you're playing as a rabbit and a mouse.
When's it out?
It's hard to
conversation at Chinchilla is one of them.
Oh, Chinchilla, okay. It just got announced, Chris. We don't know.
We don't know. Alright. Oh, you can wishlist it, though.
Yeah, the game sees players unlocking unique combat skills for each character while gathering precious materials, crafting items, and tending their farm in solo play or co-op. Local and online.
Okay.
That's an interesting thing. Don't see many local co-op much anymore. So, The Adventures of Elliot, The Millennium Tales details the Age of Magic enhancement systems. Square Enix revealed some new information and images for the HT2D action RPG, The Adventures of Elliot, The Millennium Tales. The update introduces the Age of Magic and some of the power enhancement options for players. So this is the, as it says, the action RPG 2D HD that they've been working on.
We're reaching the zenith of, if you're excited about this, you just can't wait for it to be here, and they're going to show you more about it. So hopefully something grabs your attention, because this is gonna be a big one, I think.
Yeah, this is definitely I'm actually interested in this because I want to see how the 2D HD really handles sort of action-y, because most of the games that have used that system so far from Square Enix have all been turn-based. So I'm
I
kind of
agree.
interested to see how a full-on action game kind of handles it.
And if the new IP does well in this, any chance of a Mana game being in this HD 2D after?
I'm kind of hoping they stick to the vision of Mana style for that. Unfortunately, the studio that did most of the work shut down, but I know Square Enix picked up some of the staff from that.
Yep.
Ne next is the Granblue Fantasy Relink Endless Ragnarok open beta announced. Cygames announced an open beta test for Granblue Fantasy Relink Endless Ragnarok. The beta will be available next weekend on PC, PS4, PS5, and Switch 2. Yeah, so, and that is indeed like next weekend, April 24th through April 27th. They've also released a new 7-minute introductory trailer connecting the events of the original game to Endless Ragnarok.
Did anyone play the original?
Scar did
Hmm.
on our channel. So I'm
I
actually
want.
really excited because they announced the gacha game is actually coming
Oh
west for
boy!
this. Yeah, more waifus for Tam.
Thought you could already play the gacha on in English in a web browser.
It's not an official translation.
Oh, all right.
It's one of those weird AI
It
translation type of
was?
things. And
I think it
yeah.
was out before AI was big, but all right. Whatever.
And the gacha's out.
Oh,
Oh,
the
it's out
gacha.
now. Okay. Let's all go sign up for Granblue.
Granblue Fantasy came out worldwide March 10th,
Oh,
2026.
so just like literally a few days ago.
March 10th is not a few days
A month ago, shut up.
ago. Let's see. All reviews, mostly negative. Recent reviews, mixed. So, I guess that means people are starting to defend it. Not recommended, not recommended, not recommended, not recommended, not recommended. Recommended! Oh, I've always wanted to play through the story since it looked really interesting, and this is far more convenient than the browser. I don't particularly care for the fact that the actual game part of the screen is only like a quarter of the browser window. Let us get fold slash hide on the slide, the sides, and I'll be fully happy. Also, the limited screen size for the actual gameplay, the visual novel sections doesn't even take up the full vertical space. It's very jarring. Other than that, I'm perfectly happy with everything I've played so far. It's like the review is mostly complaints, but I love it.
Yeah, I personally like this one. 10/10 time waster, a monolith of the gacha game genre, and you can feel the age. Play with the understanding that the return of investment is horrendous, even by gacha standards. I'm here because I like the character designs.
There you go.
You know what?
That'll be your review.
That's you know, I'm going for. I play gacha game. If I'm stick with the gacha game, it's because of one thing. How are the character designs? Like literally, I'm still playing Dragon Traveler, which is system upon system upon system of power creep to no ends. Like I have so many currencies, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. I just click the buttons. I just like the character designs, and I understand they're mostly made with AI textures.
What an age we live in. We've reached nostalgia for gacha gaming. Back in my day.
I mean, this is an old one. This one is like 12 years old.
It's almost retro.
Yeah, it's Oh, and Festus has gotten hooked on another Eden. So I mean, but yeah, the Grand Blue Fantasy is a very old gacha. It's like old. It's one of the oldest that is still running. It's like that's the thing with the side game gacha games is they actually have lasted longer than many others that have come out since, mostly Square Enix. So, speaking of Square Enix, Final Fantasy 14 Letter from the Producer prepares for the Trail to the Heavens. Square Enix held the 92nd Letter from the Producer presentation for Final Fantasy 14. Director and producer Naoki Yoshida showed more of what awaits players in the game's upcoming patch 7.5 updates. I guess that means we're probably just several months away from the next expansion.
Yeah, it's
So,
we're getting close.
yeah, so, yeah, because usually well, probably going to have a half patch, so we're probably like 6 months out from the expansion.
Or is it? Well, they've already announced it, right? It has a name, the new
Yeah,
expansion, or
no, Trails of the
Trail Mix,
Trails to the Heaven.
Trails
Yeah,
to the Heaven.
no.
Oh,
No, that's the
Heaven.
patch
You
title.
could say it's Heavenswardy.
No, Trail to the Heavens is the patch title.
Oh,
Patch,
okay.
okay.
Yeah. Seven, it's clarified, they have not. Yeah, I hadn't heard anything, so I was like, huh? Yeah, so the next weekend is the Fan Fest, so we'll get the name probably then, is
Okay.
the first Fan Fest.
Trail Mix to Heaven.
Yeah,
But we
so, but
haven't
this.
announced the expansion, which means it might be a lot longer than 6 months, right? Doesn't that mean it might be next year or no?
No, they're announcing the expansion next weekend, Chris.
Right, but it's going to be a year till we get it, is what I'm asking.
Oh.
Yeah.
Or is it not?
I would
I
it's usually 6 months for because most of the patches
I'm
have ended
so
like
off.
7.5, 7.55. There's usually like a half patch.
I don't know anymore. I'm so off with the MMOs.
Anyways, the stuff announced, new scenario quests, new alliance raid, new dungeon, new trial, allied society capstone quests, new unreal trial, new ultimate raid, inconceivably further Hildebrand adventures, cult crescent update, new limited job beastmaster, duty support additions, ocean fishing updates, cosmic new stuff for cosmic
New
exploration, more housing
job.
updates, more armor updates, a die system update, PvP updates, and miscellaneous stuff including custom deliveries, phantom weapon updates, gold saucer, and more. So the next item, I don't think we have a story on this, but they've announced a board game based on climbing the Shinra Tower.
Wait, who has?
Square Enix.
Oh wait, so this is not. Oh,
As I
okay.
said, we don't have it, but it's in our sheet.
Oh, how's it
Which is
work?
so Final Fantasy VII Ascend the Shinra Tower board game releases November 6th.
Is this something you do in like the remake or the
No,
re?
this is a board game, like an
Yeah,
actual
I
board
know,
game.
but what it's based on. I don't remember climbing a Shinra Tower in the original, but I guess you
Yeah, you've
did.
climbed the Shinra
Yeah.
Tower in the
Yeah, it's
original
that
too.
long, annoying stairwell that it was.
Oh, so I've
Yeah.
just blocked it out for my own mental health then.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, so they're making a
Why?
yeah,
Because board games are cool.
as revealed that they will release a new Final Fantasy VII themed board game titled Final Fantasy VII Ascend the Shinra Tower. The company has also opened pre-orders for the board game on their Japanese e-store, where it'll be available
Oh, it's a
for
tiny one. It's a little
yeah.
cute board game. Look at that. Oh no, Aeris is being
Yeah, this is
attacked.
the board game version of going up the stairs.
All right.
So, the board game will be basically based on ArcLight Games' Cat and the Tower, and Square Enix also confirmed that they are collaborating directly with ArcLight to produce the adaptation. The general gist of this cooperative board game is that the players will have to guide Cloud Strife to climb the Shinra Tower, which will have its structure gradually built by the players. However, the tower structure is deliberately made to be more unstable towards the top, so players will have to cooperate by determining how to place additional wooden character blocks to maintain the tower's balance. The game will be won once Cloud has reached the 8th floor without the tower collapsing. The whole board game will take around 15 to 30 minutes to play. So that, it sounds just silly.
I'm yeah, okay I was this. Looking at the one it was based on. It's very cute. It's about a cat trying to climb a tower to talk to his mom, who's turned into a star, which I assume means they passed away. But
sounds like it has nothing really to do with anything Final Fantasy. They're just trying to find some way to slap Final Fantasy on it to sell it.
Yeah, as Fest points out, Square Enix really needs money right now. It's just, you know.
All those NFTs are doing so
good. Yeah. Oh, yeah, where did that go? Oh, they didn't even acknowledge they're stopped with that, did they?
If they've stopped with it, they're just doing it behind the scenes. Now.
Just hiding it.
I mean, one of my friends has this hot take, or it's not even a hot take. It's kind of true, but people would consider it a hot take. Is any digital good you purchase that's only digital in like any of these games, including the gacha games, they're just NFTs.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
Without the proof of ownership and blockchain stuff, but about as useful. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Celestial Return devlog explores its influences. Metaphor Games and Shoreline Games have begun a new devlog video series for Celestial Return. The first entry examines the influences behind the game's cyberpunk world. And I see a note about there being a demo, so I'm assuming, Dalendar, you've got some news.
I did. I played the, they had a demo for this one. It just, as you can see from looking at it here, Ooze's style, mostly comic book, I thought. The protagonist is a veteran sent in to contain abstracts, which are grotesque, often violent monsters that can be man-made or man-experimented on, at least. There's a kind of a where did they come from mystery side of things that isn't explored in the 30 minutes I got to play. But the job itself is one where veterans just don't exist because you're finding these abstracts kind of have the power abilities of something you'd expect from like superheroes. So imagine sending in like 10 people armed with guns to go take down like Superman. And it's like, okay, how often is anyone going to survive trying to take down a superhero, like in this case, supervillain? In this instance, though, the first little gameplay part had you go off against a moon-faced abstract that was trying to protect the Bed of Roses, and after it tears apart three full squads, the choices I led to, including dice rolls and such, meant that a flamethrower squad came down and torched the whole place. So, like, is there a way I could have been friends with them? It's very CRPG, make your own decision choices. While being like a noir mystery, trying to figure out why, like, what is this world really? And I thought it was a cool world to be a part of. And the dice that help with everything that you choose are 8-sided dice, and you can pick from, you can put one dice in up to 4 dice, depending on how difficult the actual, like if you have to beat a 6 and you have this 8-sided dice, it will, like if you put 4 in, you get zeros on everything. Like they actually count 0 as 0. So you just wasted 4 dice because all they're one time use only. And exploring the area, looking at I found a blackboard. I learned some information. You pick up a dice that happened to be nearby. So that's how you replenish your dice, is by conversation and going through. And my ending to this was, life's a gamble, and like Howard the protagonist, sometimes all you can do is light them up and hold on to your butts, because I can see this having a lot of options, possibilities, and not all of them are going to be good or beneficial. So just had really cool visual style and fun gameplay.
Thank you.
I wasn't sure if someone else was going to say something. So we're into new release dates here.
Okay.
So Trails in the Sky second chapter launching in September. Nihon Falcom and Gung Ho Online Entertainment revealed that Trails in the Sky second chapter will launch this September. The release date announcement is accompanied by new media for the game.
Almost 1 year to the date of the first one. First chapter.
Yeah, so.
So should I give up on trying to play the original version of this and just play this one instead?
Probably.
That's actually a conversational topic that's come up elsewhere. In Japan, the Trails in the Sky second chapter comes with a remastered version of the PS, like PSP title for first chapter.
Which was a PC title.
So like a high definition remastered visuals, but it's only in Japan. And it comes with, like if you pre-order Trails in the Sky second chapter, I think, or if you otherwise get the game. I was reading about.
I'm just wondering what's better. What's a better experience? You know, did they like? And, here's the big thing for me. All those chest descriptions when you check the chest and check the chest again. I think those are a localization only thing, and they're only going to be in the original. So it's like, that's I don't know. Should I play the original so I have that little bit of humor, or do I play the new one because it looks fancy?
Play it on what?
On my PC.
Kind of clunky.
Yeah, but I played the first one, so I know what it's about. Okay,
I did too, but it was kind of like alt-tabbing out would make it crash, and it's not a very well-made PC port or whatever. Maybe it's not
so right. Along with the announcement, they also announced the English voice cast, so some names people will very readily recognize.
We got Stephanie Shell, Johnny Long Bosch, Michelle Ruff, Matt Mercer, Ben Pronsky, Brianna Knickerbocker, Christina V, and Vic Chow.
And Liam O'Brien. And I'm sorry.
That was the old stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
Cassandra Lee Morris, Ray Chase, Patrick Sates, Gabrielle Acerto, Stephen Fu, Liam O'Brien, and Courtney Lin are the new announcers.
Yeah. So quite a good list of voice actors there.
Yeah.
Although that's going to be funny listening to Brianna Knickerbocker because she does several characters in DK, so it's going to be I know that character from this other game. So, anyways, moving on. Memolith, Forsaken by Light, fully launching this month. Webzen and Black Anchor revealed that tactical RPG Memolith Forsaken by Light is exiting early access later this month. The full release update will include redesigned gameplay flow as well as additional content.
Okay.
I don't remember. I mean, I'm not saying we didn't talk about this one before. I just don't remember.
I don't remember either. Yeah. So I'm with you.
I mean, we talk about so many games around here. A Gothic Trilogy, PS5, Xbox Series X and S release dates announced. THQ Nordic is bringing the original Gothic Trilogy to PS5 and Xbox Series S and X. The games will be released on the consoles over the rest of the year. I feel like I saw something about this where someone was commenting like, yeah, they're bringing this out. And oh, that's right. It was on Landale's Wheel Spins and people were commenting about the fact, yeah, they've remade these, and it's like, who's clamoring for remakes of these games? Unless it's just one guy, and that guy is Hair Frog.
The release date for this trilogy coming after the remake of the first one is also an interesting choice.
Yeah, because I think this is the original classics. Yeah, this is the original, so I feel like this is just designed all for Hair Frog. I feel bad for the jank. Because along with this, they've also announced that Gothic 3 Classic is going to be coming to Switch 2.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to play on Switch 2?
Yeah, well, that's because Gothic 1 and 2 Classics are already on Switch 2. So this is just announcing that Gothic 3 is also coming to Switch 2. Yay! The people, I don't know. Anyways, next Elementalis, releasing later this month, Top Hat Studios, and NK Games announced the Elementalis is releasing in a couple weeks. The top-down Zelda-like will be available on PC and consoles, and apparently there is a demo available. Dalinar!
It's not currently available. I actually, for this one, paraphrased our colleague Leo Grimm, who covered it for Steam Next Fest Summer 2025. And that the game wears its inspiration on its cheek with combat that will feel right at home for fans of 2D Zelda. And that it does a lot to set up the hero, the relationship, the world, basic story premise. And the one thing Elementalis adds to the 2D Zelda formula to make it stand apart, the elements. So with elements that if they factor into the background puzzle solving as well. And gives you a glimpse into other powers, letting players grow plants and dash over gaps, etc. And people with it would be a great pickup for people that have an itch for more 2D Zelda that needs scratching, providing a traditional experience with more bells and whistles to make it all feel fresh.
Yeah. So the release date of this is April 28th, and it is going to be $17.99, available on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and the Nintendo Switch. Although, interestingly enough, you mentioned the elements are sort of the gameplay mechanic. Honestly, that just reminds me of Legend of Zelda, Story of Seasons and Stories of Ages, because you had to play with time and season and the time and seasons to do puzzles. So it sounds like it's maybe inspired by the old Game Boy. It really does look like the Game Boy Color and the Link's Awakening, Story of Seasons, Stories of Ages when I'm looking at the images here on our site.
Yeah.
So close that one. And so next up, we have the Dragon Quest Smash / Grow releasing next week. Square Enix revealed that Dragon Quest Smash / Grow is arriving on Android and iOS next week. The free-to-play title is built as a roguelite RPG where players fight through hordes of monsters. It's gacha, and I'm not playing it.
Yeah.
Platy did an impression, and he's not even going to bother playing it because he does not expect this to last a year.
Oof.
None of the Dragon Quest ones have lasted longer than a year so far. So,
are any of them still going in Japan at least? Or?
I don't know.
Many of them, I think all but one may have already closed down.
Well, but then.
Square Enix does not have a good record on. Okay, yeah. So Dragon Quest Tact may still be going in Japan, but it did shut down in NA, of course, February 24. February 2024. But yeah, it just Square Enix does not have a good track record with gacha games. So I'm not going to be surprised. Like this one's an equipment based one. The ones that where you actually collect the monsters tend to do better. So, like, he's really not expecting this one to last long, especially in the English market.
And I would argue that there's at least two Square Enix, the Record Keeper, and Dissidia Opera Omnia. While they only lasted 7 years, so it's still 7 years of fun for those that played them. So,
The original Brave Exvius was pretty good and lasted like 40 years.
There we go then.
But it ran into issues because they made the spin-off version of it, which was doing better. And so they allocated funds into the spin-off. And so they've ended up having to shut down the original now. And the spin-off has also been shut down at least. And it's a mess. They don't know what they're doing with gacha games.
Yep.
Yeah. I think the only one that's doing somewhat well is the Octopath Traveler one. And then, they've changed developers on that. So it's a whole weird thing. Then Square Enix just does not know what it's doing with gacha games. Anyways, Nitro Gen Omega fully launching in May. DestinyBit announced that sandbox mecha tactical RPG Nitro Gen Omega will exit early access next month. The full version of the game will be available on PC and consoles. And Dalandar, tell me about the demo.
So in this, there's a world where machines beyond just like the airship era, in this case, their big Zeppelins have taken over the world, and most humanity is dead. So the remaining machine aspects are also stuck on the ground. So acts go on a timeline, which is they have a randomized crew for your big mech of four members, driver, engineer, gunner, and electronics. And then what follows is a series of anime-esque cutscenes as players place abilities on a timeline and hope it all works out. There's a strategy to it, but it's overwhelming at the forefront. And the point is collecting as much resources as they can to survive. So you send them out from your settlement to go to a localized spot where you might be able to find some additional resources, get into a fight or two against these monsters, and you go back home with your extra resources to build your city up. Flashy, but not too much substance behind things. Didn't try to defend the city too much, but characters didn't really interact. Due to being a randomized set of crew, there's only they focus more on the visuals rather than actually telling a story or making connect with anything. It's just flashy, at least from what I played of the demo, which hasn't really been updated for a long time. So when I popped into it, I realized it was the same gameplay as from last year in June. So there's a lot of time they could have updated the game. And if they can make the flashy visuals match with some substance, it could be a lot of fun.
All right, so next, Monster Crown Sin Eater, releasing April 30th. Red Art Games and Studio Arum revealed that Monster Crown Sin Eater is launching in a couple of weeks. The game will be available digitally on PC and consoles with a physical PS5 release coming to Europe. And another demo.
And this one, the protagonist is a middle child of three siblings. Your older brother pops in to just teach you, in the demo at least, how the world of monster taming works, gives you your first one and 10 packs to create. What was a little entertaining, and I put as a joke, was that it's a true mix of Pokemon and Pal World, because the protagonist can join the fight and uses gun as an ability.
Nice.
They also had much less health than any of the monsters, so when I swapped them in, I didn't even get a chance to try using gun, because it's just insta-killed. But it's turn-based. While you're walking around, monsters pop in as the player's roaming around, and some of them are pretty cool and cute for designs. Like, there's one called an Apo, which is a cross between a baby Brachiosaurus and a seal, in my opinion. Kind of slow running around, so hopefully you get something like a bicycle from what you'd expect in Pokemon to help you move faster later on in the game. One underrated thing I like is there's a little satchel treasure chest you can find, and it actually has more than one piece of treasure inside the satchel when you pick it up, which a lot of JRPGs at least didn't do that, because like in Western gaming, you have treasure chest, you look into it, and you have like 14 things in the treasure chest. So I always like when you're able to get more than one piece of item from inside it. The combat does run a little slow depending on the matchups, because like, say one thing about older Pokemon, if you had a fire attack go against a grass type, you're going to knock it out in one hit. And here takes a couple of hits to knock them low enough to either make a pact or defeat them. And it's also not overly intuitive to figure out the matchups, because the skills and monsters follow a five-way triangle system. So like a pentagon type thing, where one beats the other, and it goes around a big, like you'd expect, sword, axe, and lance from the triangle system in Fire Emblem, except they added two more, and it isn't so, like, they're different names for it, of course. But it could be interesting, and hopefully the full version expands on the stat understanding and the lore behind the characters and that a bit more.
This is a second game in a series. It doesn't appear to be like a sequel or anything, but there is a Monster Crown. It released in 2020.
Yes, and from our prior backtracks, Kelly enjoyed Monster Crown, and Matt was not as big a fan. So it has had mixed reception from us here on the staff for the first one.
And that's what Steam was showing too. I pulled up the Steam page for the original, and it is just showing overall mixed reviews at 667. So you're either going to like it or not. If you liked the original, you may enjoy this one. If you didn't like it, maybe the new one will be a little better.
I don't know that that's a very helpful summary for folks, because you may like it or you may not. That's kind of where they started, right? No, that doesn't sound okay. Sorry.
I mean, that's general for anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
But
you might like this and you might not.
I mean, unfortunately, it's mixed reviews, so it's like 50-50. If a whole bunch of people overwhelmingly like something, chances are you may like it too.
This is looking like a 2.5 or 3 out of 5.
That kind of leaves out being on the fence.
What if you really don't like it, but you don't not like it?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
That's not an option.
I can't make the comparison to the first one. I can only report on what I played in the demo.
Katz just played the first one, says it's very buggy.
Okay. I mean, and that's why.
Or at least they researched it. I don't know if they played it for sure, but they're commenting on it. Nice.
But being buggy can have its downfall to a game. So, last on the new releases, new release dates, Frontier Paladin releasing next week. Singular Scheme announced that Frontier Paladin will release on Steam next week. The action RPG sees players descend into the crater before setting up their stronghold to resist attacks.
Hmm.
So for this one, there was a demo involved as well, and I figured in honor of our usual cat cast that I would just make fun of it using mostly cat wording. The movement is chonkier than a cat who's given treats every time their owner thinks they're being cute, so it goes very, very slowly and deliberately, which does not help the action combat. You practice your dodging, parrying, and taking down skeletons, but it's very routine otherwise. And after wandering through a wasteland, the game shows its pretty much true colors, where waves of enemies start moving slowly to attack you, and you fight them back, and utilize a stamina bar that matches the unbridled speed and power of that same cat after it ate a bag of Purina. So there's an audience for it, and that will likely find it better, but they'll probably find better among its genre options. For me, more unbiased, a lot of this isn't really for me. I'm more unbiased with my limited knowledge. It's like Dungeon Defenders cross Torchlight 3 with no loot. And Dungeon Defenders would be a better option, I would think, for a game that's kind of action mixed with tower defense. But that was just me.
I mean, that company kind of ruined that game. So it's like, back in the day, Dungeon Defenders would have been that, but people aren't really going back to it now, from what I've seen.
So, if you have an example of a Dungeon Defenders-like game that would be better to play than Dungeon Defenders, I'm all ears for that, too.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Beyond my skill set. So,
I mean, I would, instead of those games nowadays, we do more roguelike run ones, like Risk of Rain 2, stuff like that.
Gotcha.
Mega Bonk.
Well, but with co-op.
Oh, co-op. Okay. Yeah.
For Dungeon Defenders, you want co-op. That's part of the appeal.
Gotcha. Okay. So new early access, Moves of the Diamond Hand released on Steam Early Access. Developer Cosmo D Studios released Moves of the Diamond Hand on Steam Early Access. The first-person urban RPG takes players to a surreal jazz noir setting and is expected to fully release next year.
Jazz punk or whatever. Oh gosh, this is a weird game.
This is very weird.
There's a demo. He played it.
Yeah, and funny enough, with all of the commentary on our news beeps and boops, that is exactly how every character sounds when you talk to them in this game. So they're just basically, yes. And while the text scrolls across the screen, you have those types of sounds.
Perfect.
Like, oh, that's entertaining. But it's incredibly odd visuals. The first character you bump across is their old arts professor in a subway engineer getup, and that character's face is hyper realistic. Like, they took a cut of face out of the magazine and stuck it onto a body of the character.
Perfect.
And then later on, you find characters that have the janky character model faces that I think have shown up more in the trailer since here. But the entire world thrives on its absurdity. Leans comedic very heavily at times as well. And you have seven different attributes, which they break down to cooking, deception, wit, music, observation, physique, and wisdom. And even in the demo, you could start going down the road of, like, how do you want to join this group called Circus X, which has replaced the corruption of the mayor's office and by extension the city council of this area. And I picked cooking, so, like, I'm going to cook them the best, cook people the best dish, so they'll recognize me enough to join this group. And, like, silly stuff happens where after you get skill points insofar as, like, say you get 20 points, raising your dice from a 1 to a 2 to take 6 points type thing. So, like, they give you a lot to work with, and every dice is 6-sided, but you start off with 3 0s and 3 1s. So you want to, it becomes a decision strategically of, you want to have like a 5. So it ends up being 3 0s, 2 2s, 2 1s, and a 5. So you can, if you happen to get lucky enough to get that 5, you will win against higher dice rolls down the road. And the more you win by, you can also get additional points to allocate afterwards. And it's all based off of relatively silly stuff. Like, the first thing that happens after you put your basic stuff in while talking to your old subway engineer is you slip while getting out of the train, and there's boba tea that's spilt on the floor. And one of the options is you can lick the boba tea that's on the ground. Ew. And I got determined and puddle breath from that. So. Mm. And so not everything that, and I succeeded on that particular role. So not everything will lead to positive results, and equipment and consumables further affect dice by having things like, you'll have, like, when I was determined, you'll have +1 to your dice roll, which was rolled with your dice, or you can lose a health or lose nerve. And when you lose all your nerve or health, that's when it basically becomes a game over. So you want to pay attention to your stats and options, but at the same time, it's just weird, quirky game where you just want to explore it.
Yeah, I'm good. It looks a little too weird for my tastes. Alligator Head kind of just noped.
What is this game?
Tell me Pirate about Survival RPG Windrose, released on Early Access. Kraken Express has released alternative Age of Piracy survival RPG Windrose in early access. The game, playable solo and in co-op, is expected to full release in a few years.
A few years? Oh.
Yeah, but yeah, this is a normal survival RPG, build a base, kill things, collect resources, build a base.
Your base is a pirate ship?
You actually get ships, yes. And so my friend Rosar actually played this. And I was watching him. And it has one of the best things ever. When you are driving around, when you're, out sailing your ship, your crew sings pirate shanties.
Yes!
Like, actual pirate champ. Do what?
Can I level crew up so they can sing better?
They actually sing pretty good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I was so I was very surprised by the, because he was playing pirate shanties, and I was like, oh, and then off of, like, YouTube, because he does the multi-channel sound stuff, so it doesn't record to his VODs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's like, okay, I'm getting tired of the pirate shanty. So he turns it off, And then he starts sailing. He's like, wait a minute, what is this? So he turns off the music. He's like, and I'm just sitting here doing other stuff. And then I turn over and he's like, are they actually singing pirate shanties? He's like, yes, yes, they are. I was like, oh my God, that is the best thing ever. Mm. And it was actually pretty good. So
that is pretty awesome.
So I give them points for actually, sadly, I don't know if it's AI or not. I don't know if it's real people singing these shanties. I will give them points for actually including that level of realism into the game, that there's actual pirate shanties.
Yeah, I'm sure that's all pirates did was sing shanties all the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
I doubt they did it all the time.
No,
but,
I don't think so, yeah.
But it's still a level of realism that most games don't go to. That there's actual pirate shanties being sung in the game.
Oh, we are an age where sea shanties matter. So I understand how they got here. That makes sense to me.
Realistic scurvy for each of them.
We don't care about realism. We care about pirate shanties.
Mm-hmm.
So, Far Ever releasing on Steam Early Access in May. Shiro Games revealed that Far Ever will release on Steam Early Access in early May. The online co-op action RPG is expected to spend around a year in early access. So, like, 3 years in early access? Probably. If it ever releases. At least the last one says, yeah, it'll be
3 years. Like, I believe it, but, like, you're not supposed to tell me the truth. Tell me, like, yeah. This one. It'll be out in a year, like.
Any last-minute things before you have to run there, Jonathan?
Oh.
No, sorry, guys. I have some commitments this afternoon I got to get to.
We took too long, man.
No, it's good. I didn't want to interrupt the finishing up here, but I appreciate you guys having me on. It was fun talking RPGs again, and until I see you guys.
What are you gonna play? What are you gonna go play?
I'm gonna keep going. I'm still in the middle of Suikoden 3.
All right,
so I'll finish that and probably move on to 4 to keep the momentum going. I'm just hoping I don't get Suikoden burnt out. So we'll see what happens.
All right,
5's really good.
Yeah, and
at the same time, will you have beaten Suikoden 5 by the time you come back on the next one?
It's a pretty good chance. Remember.
Better have, yeah. All right. See you, Jonathan.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this looks like co-op action RPG.
Forever. Yeah. And it's tank support, damage rolls, very, very co-op. Okay. Cool.
Sounds almost MMO-y.
Yeah.
But probably like limited player counts.
Is this another one? The Witch Spire as well?
Witch Spire gets June early access date. Envar Games announced the co-op crafting adventure Witch Spire is arriving on Steam early access in June. The game sees players control novice witches and wizards in a magical open world. I'm getting tired of us covering.
I can't tell the difference.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I feel like it's the same thing again, except maybe not MMO-inspired classes this time. Because you're all witches.
Well, it's just witches and wizards, and survival co-op.
You're all damage
RPG.
Dealers. you're all squishy.
And you get familiars.
Oh, you get familiars. Oh, they can tank for you then. Perfect.
I just swear I saw the same trailer 5 minutes ago.
All right, let's keep moving.
No, that's it. We've got new game releases.
All right. What's out this week? Bylina hits Steam. That's a creepy looking one. I don't really understand what it is. This is Dark Souls-y skill combat thing, but over isometric overhead view action thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah, that seemed more your aisle, but it looks very creepy vibes.
It could, but it's so creepy. I don't know.
It's very creepy looking, yeah.
I have some doubts because of that. So, yeah. The next
The gameplay-wise, it looks up your alley.
Yeah, it does. I agree. The next one's more interesting to me. That's Vampire Crawlers, the Turbo Wildcard. That's right. It's a deck-building Vampire Survivors. That's a dungeon crawl. Blobber type game. Like, I don't understand how this is gonna work, but I can't wait to tell you all about it next week. Unless you found a demo.
I didn't find the demo, but it was.
It does have a demo
since Steam Next Fest.
It does have a demo.
Oh, sorry, right. It does have a demo. I didn't play it because it wasn't part of our news.
Card mechanics.
Yeah, card mechanics, but first person dungeon crawler. How is this going to work?
Very fast, apparently. Yeah, okay. So I didn't write down any notes from our colleague Chief Ezra had played it for Steam Next Fest, and he was just addicted, and it was just so fast. That's all I remember from it.
All right. Okay, so we've got Dragon is Dead, which is, oh my gosh, I looked this up earlier and I've already forgotten it. Dragon is Dead was the side-scrolling, is it Metroidvania?
Side-scrolling.
Yeah. Dark Fantasy roguelite. What?
Yeah. You get a lot of loot. It's not a Metroidvania. It has the beginning and end of the side-scrolling map, kind of like, the only thing I've played like it is ActRaiser, which isn't a great example. There's no city building parts, but you start
ActRaiser 2 then.
Yes. And you start at the beginning of a level, you make it to the end of the level type situation, and then you go on to more places to beat the bosses, I'm presuming.
Very cool looking pixel art too.
Yes. I played this live with you technically in PAX West 2023.
Yes. Okay.
So that's all of my memories now, 3 years old of the game.
Been out for a while. All right.
Yeah, it's been out for a while, but it's been being released on console.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this console is just a console release. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Next up, we got Kingdoms Return, the Time Eating Fruit, and the Ancient Monster. What?
This is Inti Creates doing a city builder action RPG.
That's got to be for Andy then. City building action RPG by Inti Creates. I think that's an Andy game. I'm gonna message. Already on my wish list. All right. What else we got? Treasure. Which sounds like I'm saying treasure with a real weird accent, but no. It is a...
Is it Treasia or Treasia?
Treasia?
Treasia.
Treasia. It's a full-scale role-playing game made up of five scenarios offering a definitive fantasy romance of love and adventure. But it looks like a Genesis game. Yeah.
It's a remake of a Genesis game that got bored.
It's a remake of what?
An actual Genesis game.
Oh, it is.
Came out on Genesis.
Yes, I nailed it then.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it and it's playing music and I'm like, yeah, this is Genesis vibes, and it's that's because it was okay.
It's one of those game preservation side of things, because the developer, I think, is defunct now. It's not the same developers listed on Steam, but they're bringing it onto consoles. I don't know what
is this like a copycat of Phantasy Star 3 with the generations that had, or did this come first? Is what I'm wondering.
Some of the UI elements remind me of Warsong.
Okay, that doesn't. I don't know that one. I don't remember that one.
Langrisser.
Oh, I've at least heard of that name.
Yeah.
Warsong was the English translation of the name. They did not call it Langrisser. They called it Warsong.
Okay.
This was, I don't know, Treasia originally came out on February 1992, was ported here in April of 92. You said Phantasy Star?
Phantasy Star 3 is the one I would compare it to.
That was 1990, so Phantasy Star came first. 1991 in North America.
A little inspired, but... And then Frontier Paladin, the game we talked about earlier with going into the pit or whatever it was called, the cavern, the crevice.
Yeah.
That's coming out this week as well.
On PC only.
That should be, if I just had the budget for it, that would be one I'd want to check out.
That was the chonky one. So if you like slow movement for it, there's some tower defense spots as well.
And for chonky, we've got a lot of editorial content too.
Ew. Tell me about it.
Open up the Steam links here. I apologize. I've been
I'll tell you. I'll tease it while he brings it up. Is a Xeno related thing. Basically, where to start playing Xeno related games, and it even includes that weird phone game we were talking about, right?
Yep.
Or DS game or whatever it was.
Mobile game.
Okay. The Pied Piper. Yeah, we got it all in here. Where should you start with Xeno games? And the answer is play Xenogears and then stop. No, I don't know what the answer is. People like Xenosaga, right?
We actually had quite the discussion this week on our Discord over Xeno games, specifically the Xenoblade Chronicles, because like some people really did not like 3, and like some of us were like,
"Oh, that's a good question. Really enjoyed 3. Are we including those? Oh, we are including those here. Okay,
yeah,
everything's Xeno.
All right, then. So this is really a discussion of Xeno. Do you play Xenosaga at all? And then do you play Xenoblade Chronicles X or not? And then, of course, you play all the Xenoblade Chronicles you can stomach for the rest. So, And then you play 3, and then you watch like the meme with the cats playing the going hard on the flutes and stuff, and it's amazing. Man, the music in 3 was so good.
Next up, we have a Pragmata review. Pragmata initiates launch.
This is the one with the robot with a kid on his shoulder, right? Is that how that works? Yep.
Yeah, rocketing into the stars with the thrilling hybridized combat and gorgeous presentation featuring the lovable dynamic duo of Hugh and Diana. It offers a short, engaging, and emotionally moving experience. That is our blurb. This was reviewed by Jordan McLean, and he gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Mm. Took him under 20 hours. Difficulty was moderate. Pros were superb, crisp visuals. Lovely dynamic between Diana and Hugh. Fresh and exciting combat. Tons of build options. Great level design and interactions, with cons being some predictable twists. And same collectibles become a bit rote later on.
We got another review after that for Ether and Iron.
From Alex Fuller. This is Seismic Squirrels. Aether and Iron takes players to an alternate deco-punk 1930s New York City. Despite some issues, its interesting mix of ideas and largely well-written narrative ultimately makes for a pleasurable experience.
What is deco-punk?
I don't know. I have never heard deco-punk.
Is that science fiction?
Look at the visuals.
Say what?
Look at the visuals.
That's deco punk.
That's what that is.
So it's sci-fi set in Art Deco.
Okay, here we go. Deco punk is a retro-futuristic subgenre of science fiction and an aesthetic subset of diesel punk. What the heck?
Oh, for goodness sake! We can't cross-reference other punks. Do they really expect us?
On the Art Deco and streamline modern styles of the 1920s to 1950s. I've never even heard of diesel punk either. Anyways, moving on to it. Alex Fuller reviewed this. He gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Says between 20 to 40 hours and moderate difficulty. Enjoyable blend of sci-fi and noir. Excellent soundtrack. Solid cast, with the cons being finale doesn't quite stick the landing. Technical hamperings and systems are hit and miss.
All right.
So next up is a Hades 2 review with Gods and Goddesses Galore. Hades 2 returns to
again,
the...
Again, McLean. That's two. Wow.
Catharnic Abyss as Underworld Princess Melanone. I cannot pronounce stuff today, apparently.
Melanone.
Sporting outstanding presentation and exciting action combat, it makes for a heart-pounding and engaging adventure on the path to slay Time Titan Kronos. Yes, Jordan McLean reviewed this. He gave it a 4.0 out of 5. Took him between 20 to 40 hours with a moderate difficulty. Pros, fast-paced, heart-pounding combat, fantastic character designs and visuals, abundance of excellent dialogue, awesome music everywhere. Negatives, boons are poorly balanced, and story or quest can sometimes feel roughly paced. So,
and then another review.
As I said, we had a lot of editorials this week.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
Next one is a Trange Overlord review. Lady Atrange von Rosenberg loves sweets. Unfortunately, Atrange Overlord risks leaving a sour taste in players' mouths. This was reviewed by Ezra Kinnell. If I mispronounce your names, I apologize, guys. He gave it a 2.5 out of 5. Took them under 20 hours with an easy difficulty. Pros: great characters, funny writing, musical numbers enhance cutscenes quite a bit. Negatives: character kits are one note and feel stiff. Combat objectives lack variety. Overall narrative loses steam due to overused jokes. And the soundtrack is severely lacking.
Which, that's probably the saddest part I had for this, because Etrange Overlord is a NIS Nippon Ichi game, and at least their mediocre games usually have good soundtracks.
Yeah, and it's, and considering it's billing itself as a musical action RPG, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Musical numbers do good, but yeah, Ezra said, but not the soundtrack.
That, or just, unfortunately, I don't know if it's lacking in quality or lacking in variety.
Mm.
That is my one concern with that con, is I don't know which way it goes. Because if it's playing like the same five tracks over and over again, that's lacking in quantity. But if the tracks are good, but
yeah,
you know, that,
well,
that
either way, it's lacking in one of the areas. So
yeah, it's lacking music in one area or both.
Maybe both. Yeah, good point. You're right. It could be both.
Yeah. AI Limit DLC, Irene's Furnace of War Impression. Orisa is back to battle some new and old foes in AI Limit's first expansion. Fortunately, Irene's Furnace of War is a fun, if somewhat cliche, expansion to an already solid game. So, this is an impression because it is a DLC, so we do not have a review score. But the quote on this is, while well executed enough, it is far from the kind of expansion that changes one's opinion on the whole game. So, yeah.
And Ezra had done the review as well and thought it was relatively solid. So a DLC that doesn't make things worse is also commendable in its own right.
That's good. I've been actually interested in that one, so I do want to give it a shot at some point. I just, you know, usual issue, money. Always the money. Yep. So many games.
Yep.
We have a Lurks Within Walls interview. Survival horror meets turn-based dungeon crawler with Here Be Monsters Lurks Within Walls. Join RP Gamer as we ask the developers some questions about the game. Ryan, you were talking about this a little earlier with the demo, I believe, correct? Yes.
When I have the chance...
He did the interview.
Yes. Typically speaking, at least for me, if I'm going to ask in-depth questions, I will look at as much media involving the game as possible ahead of time, so I can try thinking of insightful, or at least what I hope are insightful questions to ask. So I played the demo before I'd asked the developers these questions, and I was happy with the answers, and I'm still intrigued by the game. So what I said earlier sounded interesting. I'd say keep it on your wish list and check it out.
Nice.
All right. So next up is Being and Becoming interview.
More interviews.
Apparently just a lot of stuff dropped this week. So take a Metroidvania and add in Souls-like combat with an intriguing cosmic horror dream atmosphere to get developer Itchy's Being and Becoming. Join RP Gamer as we ask creator, game designer, and writer Anthony Fisher some questions about the game. This was also done by Ryan Costa.
Yes. This was actually the first time I had any opportunity to really in any way cover a Metroidvania for RP Gamer. So it was interesting to play through. They had a public playtest during Steam Next Fest. That happened in February, so I got to tinker with the game a little bit during that, and I think it's the visual style with it, as well as the gameplay that is attached to it, this will be a fun one. Those that like Metroidvanias, you know, should keep an eye on it, and let me know if there's any questions you would have changed from the ones I ended up asking, because it was a good time asking the questions either way.
So next up, we have an adventure corner, Cthulhu, the Cosmic Abyss. Cthulhu, the Cosmic Abyss leads players deep into the ocean for a mythical, dread-filled adventure. Though its gameplay and narrative are solid and compelling, performance issues and bugs holds it back. So this is an adventure corner. It is not a full review.
Because so it's not RPG.
Yeah, it's not fully an RPG. But this was also...
How many percent points does it get of RPG-ness?
Yeah.
We don't know.
This was written by Jordan McLean. Let's see.
We should add that.
Do what now?
We should add a percentage.
Is it close enough to an RPG?
Yeah, how many percents of an RPG does this satisfy on the is this an RPG scale?
I would recommend you take it up with your editor in chief with that idea.
And he's going to say no is what he's going to do.
So.
And then we have an editorial about Avowed.
Yeah, so we have next is an editorial by Austin Langer, who titled this Avowed Works Best When You Stop Expecting a Sandbox RPG. Avowed has been criticized for what it lacks compared to sandbox RPGs like Skyrim, but when approached on its own terms, it reveals a different kind of immersion built through dialogue, world building, and player choice.
Interesting take.
You know what? And I kind of like the fact we've had some interesting takes that take some of these preconceived notions on genres and games and kind of flips the perspective of them. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll give some people a chance to go back to a game and look at it via a different like perspective and give it another chance. So, so you can read that on the site. I know a lot of people were comparing this to a lot of the open world games at the time that people have played, and they were like, oh, this doesn't measure up, but you know, look at it differently. So, and then last we have the surgical narrative of Hades 2. Many games can fall into the trap of spending too much time trying to get players caught up on the narrative. In Hades 2, Supergiant's games trust the player's intelligence to understand that death is just the next chapter of the story. And that was also written by Austin Langer. So another editorial depicting more so in this case the how narrative drives the games and whatnot. Unfortunately, I haven't really read through this because unfortunately with these editorials, they are based on, you know, the player's opinion. So take anything, you know, they say, and, you know, again, maybe.
Yeah, you always want to get a sense of what they think about games in general to see how much it's going to line up with what you think. But also, this is just where we share viewpoints, so.
Conversation is always a good thing to have when it comes to games, and we find a way to cover a lot of them. So,
all right, and we are finally done. Lots of stuff this week.
I'm exhausted. So I want to tell you guys a few things. Number one, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. You can watch us every week do this show, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on twitch.tv/rpgamer. And you can go to rpgamer.com, and that's where you find the show thread for this show, where you can comment about what do you prefer, remakes, remasters, or reimaginings. So if you're wondering about remakes, that's like the Visions of Mana. Remasters is like Suikoden's recent re-release. And reimaginings is like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth? What was it called?
Chris?
Yeah.
Visions of Mana is not a remake. It is a whole new game.
Not
Trails of Mana.
Trails of Mana. Thank you. Thank you. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Actually, Trails gets both. They've got a remaster and a remake.
Yep.
Or Trials. Trials of Mana. That's Trials. What it is. Trials. Yeah. Not Trails. Silly. Trials. Okay. Cool. And then if you want to keep getting more good RP Gamer content, what can they look forward to this week on Twitch? Tam, you know about the Twitch schedule, right?
Barring any unforeseen things like me being on call, so I probably will not be streaming this weekend at all. So tomorrow we should have Scar in the morning with Hairfrog in the afternoon. Hairfrog is doing Shining Force 3, and then Scar's actually doing 8-Bit Adventures 2. I think he's near the end of that one, so he might be finishing up tomorrow. So, and then I'm actually playing Fantasy Maiden Wars when I do stream. I think our Mondays are opened. Tuesdays, we're having some internal discussions about morning format change because Leo Grimm's just been having a rough time getting his Tuesday morning streams going due to schedule conflicts and such. But we have Scar. we have a lot of different streamers doing a lot of different games. That's really the best way I can put it, because unfortunately we do have lives and we do have things that come up and change our schedules. But you can always, if you follow us on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/rpgamer, you will know when we go live, and you can always, and you can also come see us live here with the RPG cast there.
Yay.
So unfortunately it's always in flux, because again, we're people, we have schedules.
Okay.
And being on call does not help, because
why don't we let these people get back to their schedules then, Tam? Let's wrap it up and then get some lunch or whatever you need to do.
All right. So Dalendar, what are you going to play?
Yeah.
Always more demos.
I should play a demo. There was something I wanted to play that had a demo. Oh, the vampire thing. Yeah, Vampire Survivors. I might play that. Otherwise, I'm still enjoying Project Gordon. Probably going to keep playing that. I know in a couple weeks the new Diablo expansion's coming, so I don't think I'm going to be on the show next week because I'm on call, but by the time I'm back, maybe it'll be... I don't have the date down, but maybe I'll be able to give you some D4 expansion perspectives. So,
I linked you to your Steam page so you can get the demo, by the way.
You. All right. So then we're going to call it. Thanks, everybody. You have a good one, and we'll see you next time.
You're not asking me?
Oh, well, I kind of know that you're going to play Nikkei, but please tell us about the Nikkei you're going to play.
Well, I've got the half anniversary, so it's going to be new chapters and new event, and it's going to be probably a lot of depression, and it's not looking good. Like, not looking good, like, story-wise, because shit's hitting the fan.
Beer tissues and... Don't be too sad.
Oh yeah, no, I cried last week when I was doing the side story, when I knew I would, because then, and this week we're going to get some highs and we are definitely getting some lows, because we're fighting another creep ass boss.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Until then, bye-bye. Bye,
see ya.